Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 305, recorded on September 4th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer and Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing awesome.
Doing good.
Sweet. And Apple has sent out invites to the media announcing their September 7th event. It says, see you on the 7th. And as I was looking over this, I thought, hey, that's kind of funny. iPhone 7 on the 7th.
Oh, hey. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they picked it. Because it is a Wednesday. They're going to be having it at the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium in San Francisco. Also, I'm guessing that maybe the more logistical and practical reason they did it on the 7th is because, Monday is
opposite day.
Monday's opposite day, and it's going to potentially make traveling a little bit crazier than if it wasn't. So as far as iPhone 7 rumors, we've got some more. So it looks like we saw some packaging that potentially shows a 256 gigabyte iPhone capacity, included Lightning EarPods and a 3.5 millimeter to Lightning adapter in the box. All three of those things listed on this package.
I find that interesting because I'm still not believing Apple's going to put the adapter in the box.
That was fascinating. I kind of assumed that if they did put the adapter in, it would only be because they do the 3.5 millimeter EarPods. So this could be faked. But it looks as though we're going to have a 32, a 128, and a 256. Right? As far as storage capacity, I think 32 is a reasonable base storage at this point, right?
Well, and if you look at it from the perspective Adam has brought up before, which is that the low-end model is a great option for the enterprise market and businesses where you want to limit how much your employees are putting on the phones.
I suppose, yeah. Well, certainly enterprise situations where it may just not be necessary to have a whole ton of storage.
Right. Yeah, most of your stuff's going to be online, and you need to have a handful of apps to do your job, and that's what the phone is for, and there you go.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think Adam's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah, he tends to be. just agree. I like this rumor. This actually makes me interested in the iPhone 7. This is from Mako Takara talking about the, I don't think they call it Piano Black, but it's what I think Ming-Chi Kuo called it, Piano Black iPhone. It's a glossy black color. And if the photos included in this are correct, it looks nice.
Yeah, I read it as a color similar to the Mac Pro.
Correct. Yeah.
Black.
Yep.
Yeah, which is kind of a metallic-ish black.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing the anodization process wouldn't be to make it a matte finish. It would be more of a gloss finish. Just, again, in the same way that the Mac Pro is finished.
Yeah, so then all 10 people that own Mac Pros could get an iPhone that matches.
I want one of those. I just wish that they... How long has it been? Like 5-6 years since they've updated that dang thing? Like they introduced it and then they forgot they had it.
Yeah, it's over 3 years now.
It's kind of redonk.
Yep, or donk-a-donk.
Can't you upgrade those, though? I know this isn't the...
No, but you can polish them.
No, I think you can upgrade them. I think you can pull out the CPUs. I think you can pull out the graphics cards and update them.
But, the Mac Pro?
Yeah.
You have limited upgrade options for the Mac Pro. You can upgrade the memory.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you can get processors that can be swapped out, I believe you can do that.
Yeah, you can.
But then for everything else...
OWC sells them.
Okay, so you can do that. But I think for everything else, the cards that you would need have to be a custom design for the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
So if people are making custom video cards, then sure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think you're right, because they're not the standard shape, if you will. But let's see. So gloss black. So we're thinking it's going to be five different colors. You've got the silver, gold, gloss black. What else? Rose gold.
Space gray.
Space gray.
Rose gold.
Yeah.
There you go. That's five.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So we're going to get the better, the True Tone display technology. It looks like pressure sensitive clickless home button.
That's what it sounds like.
And I don't know why I keep seeing the word seamless. I don't see any firsthand rumors that say seamless. I don't think it will be. And then earpiece doubling as a speaker. That is a rumor. So this is from Mac Rumors, and I think they're potentially re-reporting Ming-Chi Kuo here. I hadn't seen this until just in this piece here.
Wait, say that again. I think I misunderstood what you said.
Earpiece would become a second speaker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What do you guys think of that?
I think that sounds more plausible than putting stereo speakers on a device that small.
Well, I think it's certainly enough. Well, it's definitely better separation for that sort of thing.
Well, and it's also front facing, which is a complaint people have often had about the speaker on the iPhone, that it points down.
True. Yeah.
Instead of out. So if you have the phone laying on a table, it's pointing, the sound is shooting out to the side rather than up toward you.
Yeah, and we may actually see some iPad Pro tech happening there, right? Because as you recall, iPad Pro has sensors in the speakers to selectively produce more or less sound from various speakers, depending on how you're holding it, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems odd to me. I mean, I guess if they can do it and there's no disadvantage doing it, then why not? But
I just I worry about software glitches where the audio for the earpiece has not been switched back to a I'm holding this right to my ear volume.
Oh, and then it blasts your brain out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like fun.
It sounds like loads of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Felica NFC support, whatever that is, the Japanese NFC stuff. I think that's their standard. What else do we have? Of course, no headphone jack. Improved water resistance. IPX7 is what we're thinking. So that would be nice. What is the Apple Watch right now? Is that 6?
I don't recall off the top of my head, but it's good enough that people
I think it is
are
7.
Totally comfortable swimming with theirs.
It is IPX7. Yeah. So I guess you can swim with your phone now.
Yeah, go team.
Or at the very least rinse it off when you feel the need. So that'll be fun. And an A10 chip. So that's what we have for iPhone 7. Apple has been granted certifications for AirPods and new Apple Watch models in the Eurasian Economic Union. So they issued these certifications. Basically, so the AirPods we're thinking are going to be like the EarPods, except that they are going to be wireless and not joined by a wire between the two. So it'll be similar to the Bradley Dash.
Okay.
Yeah. So not like the Jaybirds.
Yeah, Jabber's doing something like that now too. They just announced it. Jabra.
Oh, Jabra. Okay. Yeah, when are those coming out? Soon?
Very soon, I believe.
Okay. Well, Libratone, or is that, am I saying that correctly? They have announced that they will be shipping battery-free noise-canceling headphones with a lightning connector. So the lightning connector allows them to pull power and do other sorts of data analysis. I'm guessing that the actual number crunching for the noise cancellation hardware or whatnot is going to be done within the phone. So that's being enabled by the lightning connector. So there will be two microphones there, one for sampling the ambient audio and another for phone conversations. And it'll have four different levels of noise cancellation, which is very cool. This is actually one of the first, positives of lightning connector that I can get behind, because I don't really care about the whole, built-in DAC and that sort of thing. But this looks cool.
Yeah.
We're also expecting more Beats products to be announced alongside the iPhone 7 on the 7th. And I don't believe the Beats line has been updated in quite a while. So it's
no, I don't think it has. So it makes sense that we would get new wireless and new lightning Beats.
Yes, it makes perfect
sense. Can you tell Nightshade's really upset about the no headphone jack thing?
Does she use headphones?
Apparently. I just didn't realize until now.
That's cool. Especially since she probably doesn't have thumbs, I'm guessing.
Well, that's what makes Siri such a great thing.
Uh-huh. Let's see here. Apple Watch 2. So the Apple Watch 2, which we are thinking may come on the 7th as well, it looks as though it may have a 35% larger battery in the 42 millimeter model versus the 38. So
now, this whole battery thing is being used as the basis for saying it's the Apple Watch 2 is all but assured at the September 7th event.
Okay.
But all we have to go on is a photograph that showed up on Weibo.
Well, there's also the video from the, I think it's the, it's a British repair site, Byte. Yeah. So they got screens. They got a slightly thinner screen, which has been rumored.
Right.
Along with a larger battery. And so basically now, the external...
How reliable is that site? And I'm not trying to slam them. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I've never heard of them before. The parts look like legitimate real parts, and they have a nice video thoroughly showing them. I was convinced, but I mean, it didn't look like there was any sort of, weirdness happening in the video. But they got
The photos look good.
Yeah, so they have a thinner a thinner display where the so the exterior dimensions and look and everything are identical. It's just a physically thinner display, and on the backside, components seem to have been rearranged. There's also a different pressure plate included in their little shipment, or the Force Touch or the 3D Touch pressure plate, in addition to the larger battery. The only thing, so assuming that this is all true, the only claim that I would like to refute is they say, oh, since there's a much bigger battery in this, we're definitely going to get better battery life.
Oh, no, no, no.
Which is not...
We will not get better battery life.
Not necessarily true. Jeff, you don't think right. so at all. But so we're expecting also in the Apple Watch to have a barometer and GPS in the new units.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the new components need extra juice. Mm. So they give us the bigger battery, give us the new features, and we still get the same use time.
Right.
Which is that's Apple.
Yeah, that's what Apple does.
And it makes perfect sense. You certainly don't want to have the same battery capacity and add those components.
Yeah. I mean, what could happen is my guess is that they're going to have enough smart technology in there to really sort of stomp on the GPS when it's not needed or when you're not using it. So, for example, I would imagine that they're going to market it as same battery life, but in real world testing, people who don't use a lot of the GPS features find that they are getting longer battery life.
Yeah, that's what
if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that seems
right.
Reasonable.
So for those people who aren't using a lot of the exercise feature, I think is going to be the one that's going to use GPS most frequently. So, you know, beyond that, or if you're not using maps a lot on Apple Watch or something like that, I would imagine you could benefit from extra battery life. But again, I don't think it's something that Apple is going to market. I think that when they announce it, they will market it as, and you get the same battery life.
I think you're right.
Let's see here. So, yeah, and you know what? So I've been using the new watchOS, and I am I'm less convinced at this point that I'm going to be getting a new watch. It was a sure thing before, and
yeah,
now
watchOS 3, it's pretty slick.
Yeah, now I'm not so sure. The whole dock thing is kind of goofy still. But I mean, other than that, the fact that it is faster, it's really making me happy. It's totally usable now. So
right, and we're getting faster performance on beta operating system. So that means it has some built-in inefficiencies because there's going to be bug tracking code that's running. So my assumption is when Apple freezes watchOS 3 and takes out the tracking code stuff, then we'll see more improvements.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, though, the applications that are not actively in memory, the ones that don't have complications or are in the dock, those still take about the same amount of time to load. So
yes, I've noticed that.
There would certainly be a benefit, right? With the new watch, and we're expecting to see better performance in addition to the new sensors, but we'll have to see if that's all it is. It'll be interesting to know what other stuff comes with the new watch. But certainly it seems as though it's going to be the same design. I think that means we're going to see full compatibility with current watch bands, which makes a lot of sense considering the steady trickle of new bands coming out. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Let's see. Next year's iPhone may include a retina scanner to authenticate as, I guess, in addition to Touch ID or opposed to it. I'm not really sure. I'm guessing Touch ID is probably easier to work with than the Retina, but the Retina may be more secure, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of this concept.
Why is that?
I don't know. I'm going to have to be sold on it. It just seems like the Retina scan thing just seems stupid to me, or facial scan or whatever it is. I mean, I guess the idea is that you can pick up your phone and then it'll be unlocked, but you've got to do this weird gesturing where you lift the phone, you hold it up so it can see your eye or can see your face, and then you can use it. Mm. I don't see how that's any more convenient than the thumbprint. So unless they're going to market it as it's somehow dramatically more secure, it just seems like a weird gesture to me. I don't know. Am I wrong? Am I thinking about this wrong? It just seems like it would feel weird. So unless it really works at some, like, you know, amazing any angle that I lift it up at, it's going to do facial recognition. Maybe that works. But the whole iris scan thing, I would imagine you have to hold the phone like so the camera's pointed at your eye.
Right. And I'm assuming you'd have to have it fairly close.
Yeah, so just the idea of I'm picking my phone up off the desk. I want to get into it. I'm going to lift it up and like hold it in front of my face for a second or two, and then I can use it. Just seems awkward to me.
It seems awkward.
Really
to me
not
too.
User friendly at all.
Yeah, I'm with you, Adam. Unless Apple can show a really compelling use case for that, it seems like adding a technology for the sake of adding it.
Yeah, like where does it make it better than somebody has to sell me on where it makes it better than Touch ID, which on my current iPhone 6S is amazingly fast, amazingly accurate, works well 99.9% of the time for me. I'm still struggling with the new iOS 10 unlock thing, but that's just a learning curve.
Yeah, but, you know, I can unlock my iPhone as I'm pulling it out of my pocket.
Right.
No need to hold my phone up to my eye or anything. Yeah. By the time I actually get my phone where I can see the screen, it's already unlocked and ready to go.
Yeah. So, again, if they're doing it with facial recognition and it can do it, you know, in the same way, like the minute I take my phone out, even by just looking down at it, it can unlock, then that's great. I mean, that ends up being maybe better than Touch ID because I don't have to put my finger any specific place on the phone.
How does that work in the dark?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it would have to somehow improve the experience over the current one, which I find to be very, very good. Like, I don't have any issues with it. So, to Jeff's point, it just feels like adding technology for the sake of adding technology is just so you can have another bullet point. And maybe that's important now at this point. Maybe that's the thing, is that Apple has to start doing, you know, what I call the Samsung thing, is just throw in every gimmicky thing so somebody thinks the phone is dramatically new. But I would wish and hope that that's not something that Apple's going to start chasing, because I think it just overly complicates the technology and makes it less user friendly.
I feel like I've gotten that impression from iOS 10 as well. It feels very disjointed and cluttered. Ideas aren't maintained throughout in the interface.
They're chasing the bullet points. I mean, they're chasing the bullet points so that they have something to throw on a slide so that they can convince people that they need to upgrade.
In terms of software or hardware?
In terms of everything. I mean, if these are the kinds of things that we start to see, that's when I start to get worried about Apple. It's funny, a lot of people worry about, oh, well, they're not innovating fast enough. I worry about more that when they start chasing, when they start letting marketing control the product development and the feature set that goes into the product,
didn't get
if you look historically at Apple, that's when they've always gotten into trouble. That's when the things degrade and they lose their edge, and then they're just another Me Too cell phone maker.
Right.
In my opinion.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always thought
their strength is the saying no to to things because they're stupid and they don't enhance the user experience and they don't benefit the consumer.
Absolutely.
And doing that even at the expense potentially of the bottom line.
Right.
So when they stop doing that, and I see some of these things, these rumors that are being announced where it seems like they're just chasing feature sets, just to chase feature sets again so that they can put something on a slide and put it in a bullet point and put it on a commercial so that they can convince somebody that they need to upgrade their phone because phone sales are slowing.
Yeah, kind of annoying.
Yeah, so I'm hoping it's not true. This is a long-winded way of saying I'm really hoping that iris scanning is either not something that is coming or that Apple has a really good story to tell me about why that's going to make it better.
Well, I mean, I would assume it's, if anything, it's better security, but we'll have to see. So.
Yeah. It's going to have to be a really compelling case.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Apple may use OLED display in the next iPhone, but according to one of, TSMC's subsidiaries, they believe that they may only temporarily use it and move to micro LED.
Well, then why go to LED?
Well,
why go to OLED?
Just because the tech isn't available for micro and they want to improve their displays.
Yeah. There's going to probably be one generation of OLED because currently it's my understanding that with micro LED, the problem is yield counts and it's just kind of expensive. It's more expensive to make the displays at this point. So Apple's bought a couple of companies or bought at least one company focused on this. There's rumors that one of the tech centers they're setting up in Vietnam. They have a tech center that they're building, and I'm going to get the country wrong, but focused on the micro LED technology. And I think making the manufacturing production process easier and bringing the cost down on it.
They're doing it in Taiwan.
Taiwan. Thank you.
Yeah.
So in Taiwan. And so, you know, I think they want to get there. So we'll have OLED until they can figure those things out. Because it's supposedly a superior technology, both in terms of energy performance and display quality. It's really hard to do. And my guess is we'll probably see it on an Apple Watch first. Usually you start with smaller screens and then work your way up.
Yeah, and that's what the report also indicated.
All right, that makes sense.
Makes sense.
It's just really costly at this point. I mean, it's an emerging technology, so they can't match the cost profile of OLED right now. So until they can do that, they're not going to switch.
Right. Well, and the other thing I should mention, the point of using micro LED is that you don't need a backlight.
Correct. So the display can be thinner and more energy efficient.
Right. And it makes sense in the name. You have micro LED, light emitting diode. So it sounds cool. I guess they can make it in variable sizes, but yeah, it seems to be the yield right now is the issue. So,
well, a quality LED display is a pretty awesome thing. So if Apple can nail that, it'll look awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. OLED. It seems like Apple will be eliminating the home button next year. As we've heard rumors, according to Bloomberg, they were talking about mobile payments and that sort of thing. But one of the things they mentioned is that Apple is already at work on a major redesign for 2017, which focuses more heavily on the display by removing the home button, according to a person familiar with the matter.
Johnny's dream design.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
Single sheet of glass.
Great. So now I won't know how to hold my iPhone so that the speaker's next to my ear and the microphone is next to my mouth when I do a call.
Well, maybe they'll use that technology Michael was talking about earlier, where the speaker is a microphone and you can just hold it either way.
Okay. Now we're going to see people picking up their phone and holding the back of the phone to their face and being, oh, crap, I have to turn it around.
Yeah.
If I sound not so enthusiastic about this technology, it's because I've been using the Apple remote with Apple TV 4 long enough that I'm really tired of having to turn it around and over almost every single time I use
it. It's going to be like the hockey puck mouse all over again.
Oh, my God.
I love the hockey puck mouse.
Except you would always pick it up and it would be like oriented in the wrong direction.
Yeah. I mean, yep, I loved looking at the hockey puck mouse. I didn't like using it. But we got the
Great thing is, Michael, you can pick those up like super cheap now. Turn them into like jewelry or a brooch.
Yeah, I'll definitely be turning it into a brooch.
You'd look awesome walking around JPL with a hockey puck mouse brooch.
Mm-hmm. As if I need to increase my nerd profile at JPL.
Well, you know, I'm just the ideas guy.
That's fair. One of the top guys on the Mars 2020 project has on display in his office a fully set up Power Mac G4 Cube with the original display and the pro speakers and the keyboard and mouse. And I think it's just sitting there sleeping. He says he powers it up every once in a while, but it's what he used to use at JPL back when it was newer to do all of his fancy Mars
That's
science.
Really cool.
So,
yeah, I remember back in the day when I was a consultant, I had a couple clients that had G4 cubes for designed workstations, and they loved them.
I love those. I love the fact that you can just drop the core out. I mean, who doesn't love being able to drop the core, eject the core, in case of an emergency? I mean, what are you going to do if there's a breach? You got to eject that thing, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Apple was thinking ahead. What are you going to do with that trash can thing? You got to chuck the whole thing. Man, we're talking about Macs a lot today. Let's see. iPad. So, again, back to the iPad rumors as far as the whole weird new sizing. This is from Bloomberg. You remember the weird sizing, a 7.9-inch... along with the 9.7 and the, what are we at, 12.9? Or no, 10.5.
Yeah, it was going to be a 10.5-inch screen.
Yeah, discontinuing the 7.9. And then, yeah, but I don't know. I don't understand this, but I guess there's going to be new hardware and software features that has a faster display technology that allows for smoother on-screen zooming, panning, and scrolling. And it will be completed by wider iOS support for Apple Pencil, the report adds. So Apple seems to want to allow users to annotate objects in a bunch of different applications. And I guess I see that, right? If you go into photos and PDF documents, that sort of thing in Mail, and whatnot, I definitely see I think it's new to the beta, the ability to draw on things and annotate. That's new.
The markup feature?
Yeah. Or has that been there?
It's been there.
Okay.
At least for PDFs. I mean,
it's been there, so it's something that...
It's new. I think it's new in photos for marking up photos.
I see. Well, I do like it. It's one of those things that I never do, but I like the ability to do it. New beta, iOS 10, beta 8 has been seeded to developers and public beta testers. I'm guessing that's going to be the last one before the Gold Master comes out. Didn't really see any new features except that Apple Music users on the most recent beta have gained access to two new personally curated playlists. One is the, it's not called For You, it's called My New Music Mix, which comes out every Friday. And this is something that was announced at WWDC, actually. And I think it's, they say that it's personally curated for you based on your likes, that sort of thing. And then you also get the My Favorites Mix, which...
What is this?
It says the songs you love and more. As you keep listening to Apple Music, the mix gets better, refreshed every Wednesday. This is under For You in Apple Music.
Hmm.
Yeah, and the My New Music Mix is refreshed every Friday. And it has not been that great for me. But
is this something new in OS Mac OS Sierra and iOS 10?
iOS 10, yeah.
Oh, you know, I hadn't messed with that yet, but there it is.
Yep.
My new music mix updated today.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll play with it and see what I think.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Apple has also announced that they're going to be cleaning up the App Store by eliminating outdated apps, non-functional apps, that sort of thing. So it seems as though they've decided to... They've finally stopped caring about the whole App Store numbers game, and they're going to start refining and getting rid of apps that don't work, that crash on launch, or apps that just haven't been updated in forever and don't work properly. So
yeah, apps that aren't compatible with current versions of the operating system, or current versions. I also like that they are cracking down on app naming.
Yeah, so they're limiting it to 50 characters now, which seems like a lot, but okay.
You know, on one hand, yes, but on the other hand, there are probably many apps that really need that extra. Few characters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, yeah. How are you going to have the apps that are like, you know, where they write a whole paragraph in the title?
No, I think
those
that's
are all gone now.
They're trying to get rid of those, yeah.
Even still, 50 characters is going to be plenty to do that.
To jack with things, yeah.
Still do that. Because I'm looking at some of the ones... like new apps that we love, and you know, there's like kids app in here. There's one called Hash, Today's Talking Points, Melodist, Let Your Photos Flow with Melodies. I mean, that's still under 50 characters, I'm pretty sure, and that's a pretty long descriptive app name.
Yes, but at least it's an accurate app name.
Right, yeah. But yeah. So my point is like 50 characters is probably still being generous and may not completely stop anybody other than like the most egregious kind of versions.
Yes, and my guess is that Apple is going to be stricter on approving apps. Or no, let me rephrase that. Apple may be more likely to not approve an app if the name is obviously set up to try and draw people in inappropriately. You know, like you make a an app that has a name similar to something else, but then has other words that are also keywords that that people are likely to be searching on for different types of apps, and then your app keeps showing up in their search results.
Yeah. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, so I agree.
I just typed out 50 characters, and it's really not that many characters. For an app name, it's probably a lot, but you can perhaps do the app name, hyphen, and then a very brief description of what it is.
Perfect.
Okay. That sounds great.
Yeah, so what I typed was, this is a test of app names. I can type quite a bit, and that's 50. So it's not that many. Okay, what is the last thing here? So according to, again, Bloomberg, the it's reported that Siri, another voice assistant software, is being held back by a lack of advancements in microphone technology. So the idea is that these things are having difficulties understanding what we're saying because of, you know, no directionality, and especially picking out human voices in background noise.
And that's interesting.
It kind of seems like that, though. Right? I mean,
yes.
Usually the issues I have with Siri are when it doesn't understand what I said properly, and it's usually because of background noise. Sometimes there are issues when she fully understands exactly what I said but doesn't understand the command, but that's
right.
Not what they're talking about here.
Well, so who's working on improving microphone technology? Apple needs to get buddy with them.
Or do it themselves. That's the point. That's the point this person's making, is that, you know, we've been advancing all these other technologies in our iPhone, in the phones, but microphone technology has just sort of been stagnant. Everybody's just kind of been using the stuff that's been available. Mm-hmm. Nobody's really doing any innovation there.
Okay, so start watching for microphone related companies that are getting snapped up by mystery buyers.
By Apple.
AKA mystery buyers, yeah. Apple.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but to me, Siri's gotten a lot more accurate and does a much better job since I updated to iOS 10. And I'm only saying that because in my car, I was often having issues with issuing Siri commands. I have, one, a very noisy cabin, and two, where my phone is sort of mounted in my car is right by an air conditioning vent, and especially in the summer, the wind is often blowing over basically where the microphone hole would be. And so Siri often had a hard time understanding commands. But when I upgraded to iOS 10, suddenly, you know, I would say by a factor of 3x, maybe the accuracy got about 3 times better than it was. So,
yeah, I think that my Siri accuracy has improved with iOS 10. There are still times when Siri just gets completely baffled when I give it commands for controlling HomeKit devices.
That makes sense, though.
Yeah, because HomeKit is still a hot mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a whole separate issue.
Yeah.
I'm bummed out because something has happened with my my Homebridge Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
And the Homebridge service keeps dying randomly, and I have to keep SSHing and restarting it.
Ew.
Okay, so it's not just me. I'm having the same problem.
It was never an issue before, and now it suddenly is, so I don't know what happened.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I don't know.
Was there an update?
Not that would have been auto-applied.
Mm.
Right.
I was messing with it, though, and did upgrade everything, so both the Raspberry Pi OS, the Raspbian, and Homebridge. So, but it's held up the last couple days now, so I don't know. I got to do some troubleshooting. I just haven't had time to mess with it.
Yeah, it looks like we both have some troubleshooting to do.
Feed it some chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I know that's what I want, so I just assumed it also wanted that.
That seems totally reasonable to me.
Yeah. Yep. So,
especially if they're your chocolate chip cookies.
Your chocolate chip cookies? Oh, mine? Yeah, I haven't made those in a long time. Not everybody likes those. I guess I add too much cinnamon.
Well, not everyone has refined quality taste like we do.
for shit tons of cinnamon.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't put in enough to kill us, so it's fine.
Yeah. As long as I don't break that threshold, we're good. All right. So do you guys have picks? Jeff, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. My pick, as surprising as this may sound, is a Microsoft product. And it's OneNote for iOS, well, and also the Mac. And the reason I'm picking OneNote is because Evernote, since they switched to their new pay structure, the value that I would get from paying for OneNote is not worth it to me, because I really don't need all the other stuff that OneNote has when you pay for it, aside from being able to sync between more than two devices.
You're talking about Evernote. You're saying OneNote.
That's right, Evernote. Okay, so all that stuff, Evernote, their new pricing. And okay,
yep,
fixed.
Yep, yep.
Anyhow, so I switched to OneNote, and the transition went very smooth for me. And because Microsoft released their Evernote to OneNote importer for the Mac, because previously it was only available for Windows, once they released the Mac version, I was able to take everything I have in Evernote and push it over into OneNote, and it's great. The interface on the Mac is kind of weird because it's totally a Windows-style interface with its own menu bar in addition to the menu bar that's on your Mac. But on iOS, I mean, they did a really great job with the interface.
Cool.
And yeah, OneNote is free.
Unlimited devices?
Unlimited devices.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And it just links into your OneDrive. So you need to have a Microsoft account.
Yeah.
And that's free. And your OneDrive storage space is free. And all the devices that you want to use with OneNote are free. And I've never had to worry about anything with sending too much data at once, because that was a problem I always had with Evernote. If I had a bunch of stuff I needed to send over, I had to kind of ration myself.
So how does the syncing compare? Because Evernote's fairly good at resolving sync conflicts and that sort of thing. Is it better, the same?
I'm assuming it's the same, because I haven't had any issues.
Okay, so whatever you were used to, it's the same quality.
Yeah, and the way the importer works on the Mac, if you want to use Evernote for some of your stuff while you're trying out OneNote for other things, that's okay. You can then run the importer again later on, and choose just those new notebooks that you hadn't synced over yet.
Nice. So they worked on it for more than just one day.
Yeah.
That's
so. Yes, it's great. I'm very pleased with OneNote. So Microsoft totally nailed this online synced notebook thing.
Awesome.
I've heard that from more than one person. I've played around with OneNote a little bit. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I may try it. I ran into that issue the other day. I went to open Evernote on my iPad, and I remembered, oh, yeah, I'm not allowed to do that anymore, which is cool. But I guess, you know, I don't pay them any money, so they can do whatever they want.
Sure. Yep. And I'm not angry with Evernote for changing their pricing structure. I mean, it's something they needed to do for their business. Totally get it. And if the features that I got for paying for the service were important to me, I'd be paying for Evernote right now, and I wouldn't have switched to OneNote.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. All right. OneNote. Adam, do you have a pick this week?
All right. I got to figure out if I picked this. I was looking on the website, and I don't think. Did I tell you guys about Rains?
Not that I recall.
You told me about it.
Right.
But I don't think you've talked about it on the show.
Yeah, I don't think I've made this a pick on this show yet. I know I've picked it on other shows, and I'm going to pick it here because it is a totally fun game. I want to say it was $2.99, no in-app purchase, and it is, like, some people call it the, was it Tinder that has the swipe left, swipe right thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's got a Tinder-style game mechanic, and what it is you are a king, and you have to make decisions. And so what will happen is there's these little cards that come up with different people from your kingdom. So it might be the prince, it could be a diplomat, it could be the doctor, it could be the royal dog, whatever. They come up to you, and because you're the king, you have to make choices. So they will ask you a question, and then you swipe left for one answer, swipe right for the other answer on the little card. And depending upon what decision you make, that will influence and impact future questions and future basically the direction of the story. So it's sort of like an ongoing narrative that you have going along. And up along the top, then you also have all these different groups that you're trying to balance. So you have the church, you have the people, you have the military, and you have your money. And the goal is to make decisions in a way that you will keep all of those things in balance and not let any one of those get too low or too high. So, you know, if you have too much money, for example, and the people are suffering, the people are going to rise up and try and overthrow you as the king. So you're trying to keep everything in balance. And it's a really simple game mechanic, but it ends up getting really complex. As you progress through the game, you can unlock more cards and more people. There's some additional sort of side mini game elements where you'll play games like there's a sort of a battle game where you do fencing sort of things. There's some logic, or not logic games, but like games of chance. So the jester might come and say, hey, do you want to play this game of chance for money? Then you can kind of bet money and try and win money. And then there's kind of bigger major events that will kick off and sort of be running in the background as you're playing. So like a common one is you can choose to go on a crusade. And as the crusades are running, it's a great way to quickly decrease your population and sort of raise money. But then you've got to more quickly balance that out. So it seems really simple, but it ends up getting really complex, and it's really fun. And so what happens is you try, the goal is to try and remain king for as many years as possible. So as you're playing, years are going by, and you're trying to stay alive for the longest number of years and become the longest reigning, most popular king. And what's really cool is once you start playing, you start getting a running timeline and a running history. So there's a timeline interface that comes up, and you can kind of see all of your different reigns, how long each one lasted. There's also additional challenges that you'll be given to try and do certain things through the game, and you can kind of earn badges and all that fun stuff. But it's a really quick, fast-playing game as well, so it's great for moments when you're just waiting in line. You know, each little session can take anywhere from a couple seconds, depending upon how bad you are at being king, to maybe a couple minutes. And it's really cool and a lot of fun. Like I said, $2.99, I think, and there's no in-app purchase. It's just buy the game and play.
Which is nice. No surprises.
Yep. So it is called Reigns.
Cool. It sounds pretty fun. I think I might grab that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not overly complex, but it's also not as simple as it first appears. So it ends up being kind of fun because you're kind of like trying to figure out, you know, what the patterns are that can get you the longest sort of reign. But again, each consecutive decision influences, you know, what happens next. So it's not always if I make this one choice, you know, then, and I make, you can't really figure out a pattern. Because again, in aggregate, each individual decision influences the other sort of cards that come up and the other questions you're asked to decide between.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So my pick, I don't think I've picked this on the show, but so I just rehung my dry erase board after moving, and I'm really proud of it because it was cheap and it looks nice. It is a glass dry erase board. It I think it only cost me about $15 in total for a 30 by 36 dry erase board. And it's clear, so it looks nice. You can just erase it and there's nothing there. So the idea is you go to the Home Depot and you pick up really whatever size window glass you want. And it's fairly inexpensive. So the one I got was maybe about $14. And then you get some mirror hanging hardware for about $2. And then you just hang that sucker up and it works great. So you have a white background because, well, I mean, whatever color your wall is will be the background. And it works really well. I used it for a year already. And so I would highly recommend doing it because dry erase boards are insanely expensive. I don't know why they're so expensive. And honestly, if you leave markings on a dry erase board, a standard white one, after a while, it kind of tends to seep in because it's, you know, somewhat porous. The glass one, I don't think would really have that issue because it's far less porous than that material. So it cleans up really well. I mean, it works just as the same way as glass would, so you can clean it with just like Windex or whatever. You don't have to worry about ruining your whiteboard. And it's pretty clear. The only issue is you definitely get a little bit more glare, but you know, it's cheaper and it you definitely are paying for a different look, right? You don't want to have that big weird nasty whiteboard thing hanging on your wall, at least I assume. So I really like it. You can get bigger sizes. You can get smaller sizes. They have interesting dimensions that you can get. So you can combine them. So yeah, I would just make sure that whatever hanging hardware you're getting, the anchors you're either using support the weight of the glass or you're screwing into a stud. So yeah.
Look at you, home project man.
Yeah, with drills and everything. And you know what? I'll even link to the original Instructables article that I looked at to get this idea. And it's I mean, you don't really need to look at the Instructables because it's pretty much as I said it, but I'll include the link. So you can find all the picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes. Leave star ratings, tell a friend. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the address to which you can send your questions, comments, feedback, and more. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media. Backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Mac Observer. No, Mac Cast. I knew I was going to do that Mac at some Cast. Point. It's kind of amazing that I haven't done that until now. But, I mean, you do stuff for the Mac Observer, right? Occasionally.
I do.
Yeah, but you're at the MacCast, MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter. Thank you for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And enjoy Opposite Day tomorrow. Actually do, you know, hop in that pool. I know you have a pool.
Yep.
Sip on some margaritas or something, some kind of nice drink.
Oh, Michael, you're doing it wrong. Adam, stay out of the pool tomorrow. Whatever you do, do not have a margarita.
Gotcha.
On a floaty.
Because it's Opposite Day.
Yeah.
Because it's Opposite Day.
Yeah. Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, TMO Daily Observations podcast. It's every weekday, I assume, not Monday. Not this Monday.
Not Monday. Yeah. No.
So, yeah. And at Jay Gamet on Twitter, thank you for being here, Jeff.
It is always awesome.
Always great to have you. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. A phone.
communicate?
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck.
No.
Yuck, yuck,
no. Who wants a stylus? We have to get them and put them away.